Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th Canto, Chapter 27, Attack by Chandavega on the City of Puranjan, Text 24. Risabam javananantam Vrine virepsitam patim Sankalpastvai bhutanam Krita kila narisyate. Translation. Approaching the king of the Yavanas, Kaliyanka addressed him as a great hero, saying, "My dear sir, you are the best of the untouchables. I'm in love with you, and I want you as my husband. I know that no one is baffled if he makes friends with you." Purport. The words Yavananam Rishabam refer to the king of the Yavanas. The Sanskrit word Yavana Malecha apply to those who do not follow the Vedic principles. According to the Vedic principles, one should rise early in the morning, take bath, chant Hare Krishna, offer Mangal Arati to the deities, study Vedic literature, take prasad, and engage in dressing and decorating the deities. One must also collect money for the temple expenditures. Or, if one is a householder, he must go to work in accordance with the prescribed duties of a brahmana, kshatriya, vaishya, sudra. In this way, one should live a life of spiritual understanding, and this is the way of Vedic civilization. And this is the Vedic way of civilization. One who does not follow all these rules and regulations is called a yavana or malecha. One should not mistakenly think that these words refer to certain classes of men in other countries. There is no question of limitation according to nationalism. Whether one lives in India or outside of India, he's called a Yavana or Malecha if he doesn't follow the Vedic principles. One who does not actually follow the hygienic principles prescribed in the Vedic rules and regulations will be subjected to many contagious diseases. Because the students in this Krishna consciousness movement are advised to follow the Vedic principles, they naturally become hygienic. If a person is Krishna conscious, he can work like a young man even if he's 75 or 80 years old. Thus, the daughter of Kala, time, cannot overcome a Vaishnava. Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami engaged in writing Chaitanya Charitamrita when he was very old, yet he presented the most wonderful literature about the activities of Lord Chaitanya. Srila Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami began their spiritual lives at a very old age, that is, after they retired from their occupations and family lives. Yet they presented many valuable literatures for the advancement of spiritual life. This is confirmed by Srila Srinivas Acharya, who praised the Goswamis in this way: Nana Shastra Vicharanaika Nipano Saddharma Samstapako Lokanam Hitakarino Tribhuvane Manyo Saranyakaro Radha Krishna Padara Vinda Bhajanan Ndena Mataliko Vande Rupa Sanatana Raguyago Sijiva Gopalago. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the six Goswamis, namely Sri Sanatana Goswami, Sri Rupa Goswami, Sri Raghunath Bhatta Goswami, and Sri Raghunath Das Goswami, Sri Jiva Goswami, and Sri Gopal Bhatta Goswami, who are very expert in scrutinizingly studying all the revealed scriptures with the aim of establishing eternal religious principles for the benefit of all human beings. Thus, they are honored all over the three worlds, and they are worth taking shelter of because they're absorbed in the mood of the gopis and are engaged in the transcendental loving service of Radha and Krishna. Thus, jara, the effect of old age, does not harass a devotee. This is because a devotee follows the instructions and the determination of Narada Muni. All devotees are in the disciplic succession stemming from Narada Muni because they worship the deity according to Narada Muni's direction, namely the Narada Pancharatra or Pancharatrika Vidhi. A devotee follows the principles of Pancharatika Vidhi as well as Bhagavad Vidhi. Bhagavad Vidhi includes preaching work, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, the hearing and chanting of the glories of Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Pancharatikaviri includes Archanam, Vandanam, Dasyam, Sakyam, Atmanivedanam. Because a devotee rigidly follows the instructions of Narada Muni, he has no fear of old age, disease, or death. Apparently, a devotee may grow old, but he's not subjected to the symptoms of defeat experienced by a common man in old age. Consequently, old age does not make a devotee fearful of death, as a common man is fearful of death. When Jara, or old age, takes shelter of a devotee, Kaliyanka diminishes the devotee's fear. A devotee knows that after death, he's going back home, back to Godhead. Therefore, he has no fear of death. Thus, instead of depressing a devotee, advanced age helps him become fearless and thus happy. Om Agyana Timirandasya Gyanandana Salakaya Shakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Si Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Sigurau Siyutapadakamalam Sigurun Vaisnavamscha Sirupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sirada Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sivisakam Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dinabandho Jagatpate Gopesa Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namastute Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavaneswari Visabana Suta Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpatarubhyacha Sakripa Sindhubhyacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaisnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadada Shivasani Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Once on a Sunday feast in Cologne Temple, they had a clown, an original Russian clown from the state circus, and they're quite good, and he was spinning balls on his fingers. He was spinning them on his toes while he was four at the same time, and then a fifth one on a stick on his nose. So it was impressive, absolutely. What it had to do with Krishna consciousness, I have no idea. But anyway, after that, I gave the class, and Krishna gave me some inspiration. And the theme was about the stream of opportunities. And that one, when one is young, one takes some three, four, bounces them around in a playful way, like that, waste a few. But then, as time moves along, that playfulness disappears and one becomes more purposeful. And then just, that was a good one, take it. Good one there, take it. But as time moves along, every once in a while, it just gets difficult to keep up with the endless stream of opportunities, and sometimes one lets one go and say, anyway, wasn't that good anyway. The sour grapes philosophy comes in. And at the end, there were two old people seated on a bench at the stream of opportunities, and one said to the other, that was a good one. And that's more or less how time affects us all. So even the devotee doesn't escape those dynamics. Even a devotee will not be eternally youthful unless he has a spiritual body like Narada Muni. Even if one practices all the yoga in the world, still, right, sooner or later, some joints start to squeak. That is the nature of the material world. Therefore, when it is said that a devotee is not affected by old age, it obviously doesn't mean that he remains physically fit forever. And there are many examples of great Vaishnavas who were severely affected in their old age. One can think of Madhavendra Puri, who even had to face paralysis. Such an acharya, so exalted, so absorbed in love of God, practically unmatched, and yet he had to face paralysis. Naturally, one might take that in a very transcendental way and see it as the spiritual master gives us an opportunity to serve him, and that is also true on one level. But the laws of nature are working upon all embodied beings. Therefore, the crucial point that is being made is that the Vaishnava becomes fearless. And not only fearless of death, but also he is saved from the depression that generally accompanies old age, where one gradually loses his power, where gradually one is reduced little by little. And little by little, some strength disappears, physical, mental, vitality, all going down. And gradually, one loses everything one ever had in this world. But for the Vaishnava, that is not at all an issue. Rather, time works only in one's favor, because with time one goes deeper and deeper in one's devotional service. And with time, one's attachment to Krishna becomes deeper, and time works in our favor because time forces us to take shelter of Krishna. In our young age, we can take shelter of our energy. I remember my rash words when my father said, "If you do that, I won't give you a cent." And I said, "That's all right. You know, I've got energy enough. I can make what I need." But these days, I wouldn't be so bold to say I've got energy enough. Right? These days, I'd say like, hope that somehow I can scrape it together to do what needs to be done. So, time gradually forces us to rely on Krishna. We can no longer rely on our reflexes. We can no longer rely on our wit as our memory is fading day by day. One man with a t-shirt, old man with a t-shirt, I met him in on Johannesburg airport some years ago, and it said, "Done it all, seen it all, heard it all, but can't remember it all." And I said, "Great t-shirt." He said, "You like it? I designed it myself." Yeah? Which made it even more authentic, you know. And yes, so in this way, old age is certainly a factor in the life of a Vaishnava, but it works favorable, whereas for the materialist, it is just limiting him further and further and diminishing all his means to happiness. But for a devotee, it brings him to that one-pointed mood of just relying on Krishna and taking shelter of Krishna and realizing that it is Krishna who provides. And truly, truly taking that position. The last few days I'm reading Tukaram, somehow or other I picked up Tukaram's verses. And Tukaram is also saying, he said that material endeavor or renunciation, it's all painful. It is all painful. Just to rely on you, my Lord, as the one who's the maintainer, that is sufficient. Everything will be provided. So in this way, Tukaram, who was a simple man, had that attitude of great dependence on Krishna. And that's all that's left in any state of life, actually. Never is there a time when we are not dependent on Krishna. But when we are younger, the illusion is stronger that we have power and independence to do something about our fate. So this is one aspect of old age. Another advantage of old age is actually that one has so much knowledge. Knowledge from experience, knowledge from a lifetime of association with the scripture and applying that knowledge. And therefore, it is natural that one has peace of mind. Whereas youth is the stage of life which is full of anxiety because so many choices to make. What to do with my life? I'm 20 years old, and what am I going to do with my life? Some crucial decisions to take that will kind of give a direction to my whole life. What am I going to do? We don't worry about these things at a more advanced age. That's done, right? The choice has been made, and too late to change. Just now, what else to do but carry on? So life becomes simple and more purposeful, and therefore all one's focus becomes bundled. And therefore we see that even elderly Vaishnavas are able to achieve so many things. Because vyavasyatmika buddhir ekaha kuru nandana. All their energy is bundled on one focus now, on Krishna. And somehow or other, making spiritual advancement. This is what I desire. I can't say that that is the case. Because rather it is still bahusakhi anantascha, just consciousness played out due to sense gratification. When we are involved in sense gratification or desires for sense gratification, then we invest mental energy into so many opportunities for possible happiness. It might just work. Eh? So some keep a bit of attention there. But that might also work. Keep a bit of attention. Oh, and there is another opportunity. Keep some attention. Oh, and another one. And in this way, all the opportunities at the same time on our mind. Just, and this is Bahusakhi Anantascha. Looking at so many opportunities for sense enjoyment. But if one has tried and failed, parabhavastavat abhudajato, if one has been defeated again and again by the material energy, then why bother? Right? Forget it. Too much trouble. Waste of time. So Krishna has arranged it that through the material energy, one gradually comes to this realization. And that is Krishna's mercy. That is his kindness. The fact that this built-in frustration is there in the material world. That is his kind mercy upon us. And it shows, as Srila Prabhupada says, that Krishna is more eager for us to go back to Godhead than we are. And that's a good fortune, because even those of us who are in this movement, how eager are we? Right? And what to speak of the rest of the world who has even never thought of the idea, or that there is something like that, or what's the point? But even if one can see the point, the value of going back to Godhead is somewhat intellectually appreciated still. Our desire is not that strong. So it's a good fortune that Krishna has actually made all those arrangements for us to bring us to the point of bowing down. With old age, one will bow down sooner or later. Some days you can't get straight. It goes like that.
Grandma, what are you looking for? Have you dropped something?
You fools, can't you see that I've lost the pearl of my youth? She said. So this is there. That's Chanakya Pandit. So like that, old age is from time to time being described. Of course, Srila Prabhupada is well known for, on one occasion, asking the devotees to point at an old man, and then, when they were somewhat confused, because they didn't want to point at Prabhupada, I guess, then Prabhupada himself pointed, and he pointed at a young child and said, "He's an old man." How's he an old man? Prabhupada said, "He's an old man because he can die any moment." So old age ultimately means that. I remember in 95 when I was recovering from gunshot and I was lying on the sofa in Delhi temple, Trivikram Maharaj came in and I folded two fingers and offered obeisances. And I said, "Sorry, I can't do any more than this." He said, "It's all right. You are older than me." Trivikram Maharaj is one of our older members in our movement, all wrinkled and everything, but still very enthusiastic about Harinam. But that day I was older, because I was closer to death, he told me. So yes, it is like that. So truly, we cannot really get so much into this mood of my old age and when I get older, you know, and so on. Now is the urgency. The urgency is at any moment. And there is no guarantee that we'll have a long lifespan. Therefore, we must now, immediately, take it that there is no time to waste. And that is... maybe I should develop that theme a little bit. No time to waste. I think that is our problem. We are wasting a lot of time, all of us. We are just not believing that maybe it's going to be all over any moment. We're just not serious enough. And I guess collectively we can say that we are we have so much knowledge, but we're not taking advantage of it. We have, even if you're not very learned, but even if you know just the basics in this movement, that's already enough to know what the goal of life is, what to do, and so on. And yet we are not doing. This inherent weakness is our great problem. And we keep on taking shelter of the material energy. And we keep on making material arrangements for our comfort. And no matter how apparently courageous we act, we keep our material security on and on. And just that faith to go into any situation relying on Krishna. Where is that? Very difficult to attain. And that's what we see in great men. In great men, we see this kind of spirit of putting all faith in Krishna. I mentioned Tukaram, and we can mention many others who put their faith completely in Krishna. Sometimes you wonder if the international society, if all the arrangements that are there in the international society for Krishna consciousness are helping us or are blocking us. Nice, comfortable temples like Radhadesh, where you have everything at hand that you need, and it's all very comfortable. And if you then think of the sages of yonder who are living in a forest, and obviously a little different. A forest naturally will force one to take shelter of Krishna. A forest at night. Even if we go out camping one night here somewhere in the forest, we could just not on a camping, but on the forest, in the middle of the forest. Well, wild boars and all kinds of, well, I guess the wolves have died out these days. But even then, you know, we're already afraid of the teaks, right? So one doesn't think of such things. But if you actually go into the forest, they're all there. All the nasty insects, all kinds of creatures that one would rather keep at the other side of the glass. So in this way, living in the forest was naturally bringing one towards Krishna. Sometimes you wonder, all the comfortable arrangements, is it too comfortable? Is it really what binds us to the material energy? And would it be beneficial to just place ourselves a little more in a renounced mood? Should we just go on foot for some time and beg and just live like that? And would we be benefited by that? And we may say, well, there is a higher type of renunciation, yukta vairagya. But yes. But apparently we see in our acharyas, who were also Vaishnavas, also Rupanugas, also followers of Rupa and Raghunath, we see that extraordinary renunciation. Gaura Kasuradas Babaji was, of course, Saksat Vairagya Murtaye, the personification of renunciation. In the rainy season, chanting under an old boat, picking up discarded cloth. And then his disciple, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, performed such austerities that Srila Gaura Kasuradas Babaji said that he has surpassed me in his renunciation. So we see that in our tradition, we see that the acharyas perform tremendous austerity. And sometimes, the way I have phrased it is that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he built a bridge from tradition to modernity, really, and to Krishna consciousness from there. And then he brought it to us. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, he started out on the traditional side of the bridge, and then went over the bridge and then started preaching in all the modern ways and means. But we started out on the modern side of the bridge and then continued with all the modern means to push on Krishna consciousness. And sometimes you wonder, would it be good for us to sometimes just for a couple of days go over the bridge into the more traditional role and bake some chapatis? Maybe Pallad Nandamarj and myself and Yadav Nandamarj will come for lunch today. 7 houses and there can be no smoke from the chimneys and all that. Yeah? It's all mentioned in the Manu Samhita. You're allowed to beg, but you can't like wait till you see smoke coming out of the chimneys sort of at lunchtime and then casually come around and beg. No, that's forbidden. So It's interesting reading about it, but can we do? And then you think of a purport where Srila Prabhupada describes those men in the age of Kali who dress up like renunciants. It's like, it's one of my, well, one of the things I look at every once in a while. So, the point is that dependence on Krishna is a very important principle. Maybe in the earlier stages of this movement, that dependence of Krishna was found in being on the street when one was thrown out of the Sankirtan van. Right? And then devotees learned to pray on the street. It's a fact. How to develop our dependence on Krishna? That is my question. It's not really that I gave the answer. I just raised the question and the importance of doing so. And that we, in our own life, since we are all very different and all have a very different need and all have our individual situation, therefore we may all search for that dependence in a different way. But it is a fact that unless we come to that point, we are in a precarious position. We are not yet considering that one can die at any moment and that therefore one must be completely prepared at all times, prepared to leave today. And Srila Prabhupada oftentimes spoke like that, to chant as if it is one's last day in this world. I guess I didn't do that this morning. It's like I kept four rounds and downloaded my mail, and if it would have been my last day, maybe I would have forgotten about the mail or my last four rounds. Yeah, maybe. So it's like that. The material energy is very bewildering and somehow or other creates a excuse me. A false sense of security. And that false sense of security created by the material energy is so powerful, that even great exalted saintly persons can still fall prey to the illusory energy. Therefore, it takes a real endeavor, and everyone will have to take that upon himself. We cannot just expect that we simply have to join a movement and that it is like a river with a strong current and that it will automatically carry us the whole way back to Godhead and that we never have to ever again think about it. We just have to be here and then everything is fine. That is really not correct. Srila Prabhupada coined that phrase independently thoughtful, which is very far-reaching, and it means that the onus is on the individual to really do something, to really understand. We're flying our own plane, as it is explained. Srila Prabhupada said, when the plane is on the ground, then there are so many vehicles around it, they're refueling, they're loading things, mechanics are servicing things, people are checking the wheels, others are checking the engines, and all these things. And there's a whole team doing all these things, and it's all going on. But once one is up in the air, then one is alone. Thus, all of us ultimately have to take it in our own hands. And we can get all the support. We can get all the association, we can get all the knowledge, We can memorize huge portions of the scripture. We can be extremely learned. But vidvamsamapi karsati, the learned are also struggling. Also. So ultimately, it is up to us to really make that endeavor. And therefore, everyone has to just for himself make a very serious endeavor. And no one can do that for us. And no one can see how serious we are. Externally, whatever may appear, it will all, my spiritual master always says, it all comes out in the wash, right? That he learned from a school teacher, Mr. Bennett. And he repeats it from time to time. There's whatever, it all comes out in the wash, means whatever pretense is there, whatever show is there, whatever is not 100% genuine, it will all come out in the wash, sooner or later. We'll have to face it. That is the nature of spiritual life. So, time is very short. And that's my conclusion on this lecture, because I don't want to drag it on. Time is very short. And looking at it, already so much wasted. Already so much, not so many opportunities for spiritual perfection not really taken advantage of. And I think everyone can, for himself, make an inventory like that and say, all the opportunities I got, the association of the sadhus, the stay in the dham, the scriptures, all the good mercy, how much advantage did we take of it? And when are we finally going to make the change? That is the question. That is the burning question. In America, they have a festival called the Burning Man. So in one sense, we are all burning men. Right? We're all burning in this question. When are we finally going to get serious? That is the question. And we better get there before we reach the end. Tis risky. It is risky to drag one's feet, undoubtedly. And I can say these things and drag my feet at the same time. That's the interesting part. I give a big lecture, and yet, I must confess, I drag my feet, and I don't know if I'm really going to stop do it as soon as I get up from this Vyasa-san. That proves our foolishness. And if anyone is better than that, then please have mercy upon me. Okay, I'll end with that on a high note. Any question? Any comment? Yeah. Okay, so Vraj Krishna makes the point that we invest a certain amount of energy in a particular task according to our perception. And when our perception changes, then isn't it then that also our endeavor will change accordingly? Yes, of course, that is a fact. And if the doctor tells us you have one more month, then certainly something will change in our approach to the situation. Classes like this, of course, are aimed to change our perception. Bhagavatam is aimed to change our perception. Because Bhagavatam is not just a sweet book, right? It's very sweet, describing us about Krishna, but it's not all sweet. It's also very cutting, Bhagavatam. Now we're in the middle of this whole Puranjan, these chapters, and they're cutting. They're quite cutting. Lots of heavy things in these. And Bhagavatam is full of very cutting verses. This cutting aspect is for the sake of changing our perception. In the middle of this chapter called attack, it's already a cutting word, attack. In South Africa, when we drive, then the little navigator in the car says suddenly, attack zone, attack zone, attack zone. And it's like, then you think, what do I do now? Get my hell. You know, there's nothing you can do, right? You just sit there. Okay, attack zone, and then what? Take your helmet. Attack zone. But the whole material world is an attack zone. He's from South Africa. The material world is an attack zone. And Bhagavatam is pointing that out. By regularly reading Srimad Bhagavatam, our perception will change. And then, yes, then we can become more established in understanding our eternal position, and we can let go of all the investment in the temporary, other than for preaching. Anyone else? Can I elaborate on the combination between dependence on Krishna and the need to do things or achieve things for Krishna? Yes, Srila Prabhupada of course said one should work as if everything depends on our own endeavor, and then leaving the result up to Krishna. So the dependence comes in realizing that the result of all our endeavors depends on Krishna, but still we have to endeavor as if everything depends on us by our own work. And there we calculate. We calculate according to our means. You know, if you ask, how much can we lift? Right? How many kilos can we lift? So a certain task may be impossible. Impossible. But then, when the Krishna factor comes into the equation, then we can no longer just calculate, because then anything becomes possible. And that is the... So we're also counting on that. And sometimes a devotee is also taking on a task which goes beyond his capacity, and just having faith that Krishna will somehow or other make the arrangement. Especially if it deals with fulfilling a desire of a superior acharya. Just like Srila Prabhupada, on the order of his spiritual master, went to America, and it was quite clear that he didn't really know how to tackle it. He went to New York in 65 and spent a year studying the situation, which basically meant like, had no idea exactly how to deal with it, but had great faith that Krishna would make an arrangement. So this dependence and our own endeavor are an interesting mix. We act as if things depend on us. Other times we act also upon the order of the acharyas or of the scriptures, and then having faith that Krishna will somehow or other uphold this. And it is on the strength of that that we are preaching, because statistically we are negligible. I mean, as a movement, We wouldn't even make it, you couldn't even express this movement in percentages of the world population, practically speaking. 0.0000, I don't know how many zeros, until it gets to a number. So, in that way, we are a very insignificant movement, but we don't see it like that, because Krishna's on our side. So, in this way, there is this combination where Krishna gives us independence, wants us to offer that independence to Him, and then we'll see what results will come, whether it will be Hanuman or whether it will be a spider. That's, we'll see. But we'll throw whatever rocks we can into that ocean, right? And He'll make them float. How? I don't know.
You raised that question about Yuga Vairagya, that if you look at the tradition, we have this concept of Yuga Vairagya, the Yuga Acharya, it's really steeped in Vairagya, the Yuga kind of comes from that perspective. We come from the other.
Yeah. Okay, on the topic of Yukta Vairagya and the previous acharyas and how they were steeped in a tradition of renunciation, austerity, and now we are living in modern times where more emphasis is on the Yukta, or having so many facilities, and Vasudev brought up the point that we can maybe also just appreciate that in gratitude. And it's there, it's a fact that all these giants were there. I mean, all these previous acharyas are like giants, giant devotees, like Gaura Gosardas Babaji, a giant, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, a giant, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, a giant, Prabhupada, a giant, all spiritual giants. And we are dwarfs, right? So what to do? So as dwarfs, okay, we're happy that we got a little castle somewhere, and you know, and where it's relaxed, where Kali Yuga is not raging right in front of your nose. It's kind of nice that there are such places. Absolutely, we're very grateful that there's a holy dham where we can go. Right, some relief, and so on. So yes, gratitude is there, and due to our dwarf-like nature, we're not such great heroes. But somehow or other, I have this image of the caravan, and in front of the caravan there is the Panchatattva, and they are just dancing in inconceivable ecstasy, and all their followers, the immediate acharyas, are also just shedding tears of love of God, and then it goes on, and then at the back of the caravan there's us, right? In the same caravan, and it's like it looks a little different, you know. Anyway, we're sort of in there and attaining the same destination. That is the amazing thing, you know? So that gives me courage, you know, to think of it, that we are part of that amazing caravan, and who is dancing up front. Because when I look at the back, I sometimes feel a little discouraged. But no, then you sort of get, are we ever going to make it? But anyway, just by staying in the caravan, we'll get there, same destination. So we are very grateful that we are being led by all these spiritual giants. Finished. Okay. Now comes a check question.
I'd like to say one of the
loud, because deaf. Yes. Right. Really, huh? From who? Okay, well, I'll tell also one little story now. There was a devotee who was in Mayapur, and from the early days, and he was a pujari, he was my good friend, and he was a grihastha, and for many years worshipping the deities. And then one day he went to an astrologer, and the astrologer said that, oh, with your whole life will change. Within 3 months, you will leave your family and start a new family. He said, nah, how can this be? This is too much. Time went by, and after 6 months, nothing had happened. Nothing. He said, look at this useless astrologer. Then he came after one day past the house of the astrologer. He said, let me tell him, you know. He said, your prediction was totally useless. The astrologer said, okay, let's have a look. And the astrologer did a prasna, a special calculation to see on that particular issue, from why did it not happen. So then he did the prasna, and the answer that came was, the deity that you are worshipping has interfered. You know, well, I could have come up with that too. And then, right? But then, the amazing thing happened that he got an offer to get involved in some business scheme, and he gave up his service to the deities. And within 3 weeks, it happened. The whole thing happened. It all came out. So, two things I learned from that, you know. The deity definitely interferes in the life of all of us. And the second thing is, that astrologer is pretty good. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.